Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Rebecca, and I will be your host for today's forum. The Hinckley Institute is dedicated, was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Nobel Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and citizen involvement in government. The Institute offers paid internships for students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Institute also offers classes, our nation's only campaign management minor, over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door to our office or online at hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is Who is Going to Win and Why? And is co-sponsored by the Salt Lake Chamber Capital Club. Today's guest is Kirk Jowers. Kirk is the director of the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics and Federal Relations. He is also an associate professor and the 2007 recipient of the University of Utah's Par Excellence Award. In addition, he is a partner in the Washington, D.C. law firm, Kaplan and Drysdale, acting chairman of the Governor's Commission on Strengthening Utah's Democracy, and a member of the Utah Constitutional Revision Commission. Mr. Jowers has provided legal and political advice to state and national political parties, more than 30 congressional and gubernatorial candidates, Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofit organizations, and three presidential campaigns. Described by the Salt Lake Tribune as the most quoted man in Utah, Kirk is a frequent media commentator and lecturer on politics, campaign finance laws, government ethics, and the First Amendment. He is also the author of several publications. Kirk Jowers is a graduate of the University of Utah and of Harvard Law School. He is married to Kristen Jowers and has five children. Please join me in welcoming our guest.
Well, this is nice, bringing the Capitol Hill Club to the Chambers Capitol Club up to the Hinckley Institute. It's been fun meeting with you in different venues, but finally on my home court, so great to have you here. And some of the students as well on a sleepy Friday morning. So the title is just very simple, Who's Going to Win and Why? And I think we'll probably start with the Utah races, do that very quickly, and then we'll get to the president, and then hopefully we can just do some Q&A. 4 days until early voting starts in Utah, 18 days until the 2012 election. Amazingly enough, it seems like it's been decades before we finally get to see Obama versus Romney, but it's getting near. Utah. Let's do Utah first. My crack research team here looked at everything, and it appears there's only one House race occurring in Utah, which is odd because we all know from Civics 101 that in the U.S. House, there's supposed to be every 2 years there's an election, but as it appears, there's only one, Matheson versus Love. I was confident in their research, and then Ted brings these, someone by the name of Donna McAleer, as I understand it, and she's running for something. So I immediately had to do some more research, and it's true. There are three other races, actually. There are a total of four House races here in the state of Utah. You wouldn't know it by watching TV or the media or anything else, but there are. Of course, this will be the first time we've ever had four in the state of Utah. We've had three last decade, but with redistricting, we gained another one. So what are those? We've got the first district is incumbent Rob Bishop against... Perfect. Exactly right. So that's race number one. Number two, we have Ted Stewart, this is an open seat, was not going to be an open seat, typically would have been Jim Matheson's seat. He decided to move over to the fourth seat. So we have Ted Stewart with Jay Sigmiller there. The third district, of course, is Jason Chaffetz against Soren Simonson. And then finally, the race that's getting all the attention is Matheson Love. I hate to say this, looking at my good friend, who's going to win and why? The first three are pretty easy. The Republicans look to be on a cruise control to win those races. And happy to go through the dynamics of those races. I think we have a phenomenal Democratic candidate in the first district against Bishop. But this is going to be a very difficult year for any Democrat in Utah, partly because Utah obviously leans very Republican. Those are just simply the numbers. Partly because this Romney tsunami, which is coming through Utah, and you look at the numbers, it will be quite significant. So that's going to make it tough. So the final one is Matheson versus Love. It's a very exciting race. People here know Jim Matheson. They love him. He's overcome odds for the past decade. There's a lot of second guessing now on whether he should have moved over and done that fourth seat. Maybe he should have done the second seat. Certainly when you look at the race now, it seems like that would have been the better choice. Maybe any race would have been the better choice than the fourth. Mia Love has got a lot of wind beneath her wings. I would say in any other year, I would probably still put my finger down for Jim Matheson. He's liked. There is, especially in Salt Lake County, there's a real desire, even for those unaffiliated who lean Republican, to vote for at least one Democrat to prove that they're not all the way partisan. And so that would be probably enough for Matheson, even against someone like Mia Love, who has hit this state like a storm. She's had every major Republican candidate come into town, and she's got two more coming before the end, Cantor and Boehner. If you're a Democrat, the good news you would pull from that is she must not have it completely wrapped up, or she wouldn't need to bring in the Speaker of the House and his number two. So that gives you some hope if you're a Matheson fan that he can still win this thing. I think it is margin of error right now. I think either one could win it, but it's going to be very tough with all of these Romney voters. The straight ticket voting will be huge. I'm not a fan of straight ticket voting, I've got to tell you. I think every candidate deserves your look. Even if you come down and you vote all Democrat or all Republican, I think the candidates deserve for you to go and look down your ticket, push the button for Romney or Obama, push the button for Matheson or Love, and push the button for everyone else. But that will be a huge part. The other part that I think is probably difficult for Matheson in this race, besides the natural Republican advantage, besides the fact that Mia Love doesn't have a real record for them to jump on. She's got some statements, and there's things that they're doing to try to bring up a contrast. Besides the kind of historic nature that Mayor Love represents for that race, is if it's true that people like to go and find, if Republicans like to go and find one Democrat to vote for, they may have that in the next kind of real interesting race in Utah, which is for Salt Lake County mayor. And there you have Mark Crockett versus Ben McAdams. Ben McAdams, the Democrat in that race, quite well liked, has run, I think, a pretty innovative and fun campaign that's gotten people involved. Crockett has run a pretty effective campaign as well, and that seems to be pretty much margin of error. So that could be a problem for Matheson if people scratch that itch by voting for one Democrat. If it's McAdams, that's going to hurt Matheson. There have been times where there hasn't been someone else to really vote for. Matheson would get those votes, and then they can go ahead and vote for Love. So if I have to predict on all of those, I think Love probably gets it at the end. It's going to be close, though, 2 or 3 points. And I think Crockett probably emerges out the other end, probably even closer. Either of those could go either way, based on a gaffe at the end. I think it's certainly tight enough and there is enough attention on those races, not enough that they deserve, but enough that if something happens, it could move numbers. With the other races, there just hasn't been the attention paid, the money spent, to even give the Democrats in those other three a race. And then, of course, you've got our two statewide. You have Hatch and you have Herbert. They'll both win by pretty huge margins. And that brings us to the final Utah question. And you've got the House and the Senate in the state. Those will keep supermajorities of Republicans. And in fact, it looks like, if anything, Republicans will slightly add to that total. So if you love a one-party state, it will become more so after this year, 2014. We'll see what happens. And we'll talk a little bit about what we can predict there. So the final question for Utah is the bragging rights question, which is the Utah 800-pound gorilla question. Who will win by the biggest margin? Most people probably think it's Romney. I don't. I think it will probably be Gary Herbert who gets the single biggest victory in the state. It could be Chaffetz. Chaffetz, I think, got it last time. Who wins by the biggest percentage? That's kind of it for Utah. I look forward to talking about that when we get through. So that brings us to Romney, which is what we're looking at here, the presidential debate, presidential race. The big question, so to bring you up to date, Romney prevailed over the Seven Dwarves in the primary. It took a little longer than some of us wanted. But what happened with that, for the most part, was not that it really took Romney that much more time to pull out the victory. What happened was the Republicans decided to copy the Democrats in how the presidential election would be conducted. This is one of those facts which mean nothing, because who knows what would have happened had the rules been changed. Kind of like saying Utah would have beat BYU if there were no three-pointers or something like that. You play the rules the way it's set. But in 2008, had Democrats had Republicans' rules and Republicans had Democrat, you would have had a presidential race between Hillary Clinton and Mitt Romney. This year, in 2012, the Republicans decided to change the way they did it and turn it into the Democrats, which allowed for proportional voting instead of winner-take-all. And that obviously stretches the campaign out quite a bit more. So, for an example, in Missouri, John McCain won with 31%, Romney had 30, Huckabee had 29. In spite of that essentially dead heat case, McCain got every vote from Missouri. With the Democrats, what you had was proportional. So if Obama beat Clinton by 1 point, he barely got an extra vote for that. He got a little bit, but not much. So that greatly impacted. This time, Romney had to run under those same rules, which didn't give him all the votes. He had to share votes all the way through. And that's why it took a little bit longer. Nonetheless, Obama knew it was going to be Romney from 6 months before he actually locked it up. We all kind of knew it was going to be Romney. Everyone seemed to know but Santorum. And there we have it. We've got the Romney-Obama matchup that everyone expected for over a year. So I think there's just so much to discuss, but let me just go through a few late night jokes, each of them. I know that's where our young people, we know from the studies, get most of their news. And it's not a bad way to go for the most part. Every one of these jokes actually leaves a pretty good trail on what was happening in the race at that time. So, we'll do some pre-debate ones. First, Jay Leno. He says, a new survey out today shows how much time we waste every day in our lives. For example, we waste 7 minutes in line every time we go to get coffee, 28 minutes getting through airport security, 4 years waiting for Obama to do something about our economy. Jay Leno again, September 19th. Well, President Obama's big problem is still the economy. I tell you, the economy is bad. The economy is so bad, Mideast protesters are throwing rocks and then asking for them back. The economy is so bad, the only thing keeping Mitt Romney from winning the election is Mitt Romney. That's how bad the economy is. Jimmy Fallon, here's what people are talking about. Yesterday, 132 inmates escaped from a prison in Mexico after digging a 23-foot tunnel. Man, if they dug themselves any deeper, they'd be Mitt Romney. So that's what's leading up to the first debate. Of course, Obama having a hard time getting traction. His unfavorable is high because of the economy, but Romney is blowing his foot off left and right. He has a poor reaction to the initial problems in Libya. Doubles down in a press release, which goes even worse for him. He then has the 47% video released. Those are the two things that Romney could least afford. His foreign policy has never been his strongest, and this image, which the Obama campaign has spent hundreds of millions of him being an out of touch multimillionaire who could never relate to people, has started to catch on. That 47% video really hit at a horrible time, and Mitt was not looking good in spite of what seemed to be a very difficult situation for Obama to win. That's pre-first debate. Let's look at pre-second debate through these late night guys and see what happened. So Craig Ferguson, it was a big weekend for Felix Baumgartner, the Austrian daredevil who broke the world record for skydiving. He jumped off a balloon 24 miles high. He fell to earth so fast he broke the sound barrier. That's fast. He fell faster than President Obama's poll numbers after the debate. So we get an idea the first debate may have gone well for Romney. Conan O'Brien, presidential election getting close. I'm glad, too, because this election has been going on for, I think, 44 years now. The Obama campaign is releasing a new ad showing Americans whose financial situation has improved over the past 4 years. Unfortunately, the only person who appears in the ad is Mitt Romney. So, finally, last two jokes, post-second debate, and then we'll be caught up. In fact, this is Jimmy Kimmel. In fact, I think they officially kicked the holiday season off last night with the debate. CNN poll today said that 46% of viewers thought Obama won and 39% thought Romney won. So it looks like Obama's strategy of staying awake through this one paid off. Obama last night, if you get a chance, go to those Al Smith speeches. Obama and Romney were both phenomenal. President Obama at the Al Smith dinner. Some of you may have noticed I had a lot more energy in the second debate. I felt really well rested after the long, nice nap I had in the first debate. So, for those of you who like Romney more, he is a lock. He is a lock to win. Would be the talking points, the spin I would give you. Why? The economy stinks and gas prices are stratospheric. Unemployment numbers remain rotten. What is our foreign policy? There doesn't seem to be any clear position there. The deficit is beyond enormous and growing by the minute. Obama actually has a record to defend this time. He is no longer all hope and change. This will be something that Mayor Love will have to deal with in her subsequent elections if she indeed is elected. And the trends have all been going his way since the first debate. So if you like Romney, all of those things should give you a lot of comfort that he's going to win. So is that the end of the story? Unfortunately, no. If you go to the New York Times 538 forecast, in spite of all those things I just said, and they're all absolutely true, Obama is given a 70% chance of winning today. So all of these great polls, this amazing first debate by Romney, all of these things, he still predicts 70% for Romney, or for Obama. I think that's high, but why is that perhaps accurate? Why is the edge still for Obama? Ohio. Ohio is the number one reason for that, and we'll get into those numbers quickly. Let's look, though, because it can't be lost what has actually happened over these past few weeks. A couple of weeks ago, I had to speak to a few hundred people on a similar topic, and I was really nervous because I always tell my students, make sure you know the background of the speaker, because it matters. We all have backgrounds. We all have biases. I am trying to be as objective as I can, but the fact is I've known Romney for since 1994. I've been employed by him. I've had almost every type of relationship with him. I really love the guy, so I can only be as objective as I can be. But the fact was, I was really nervous for Mitt, probably more nervous than I'd ever been since 2005 when I was first in his living room and we were kind of discussing what it would take to run for president. he was in deep trouble. And let me just give you a very quick look at this. 9 of 13 polls conducted in September showed Obama cracking 50% compared to just one poll in August. Again, polls don't matter that much, the given point in time, but the trends matter a lot. And so, and there's all sorts of debate. There's a lot of debate by the Republicans on whether Democrats were being advantaged by the polls when Romney started sinking because, you know, were they properly factoring in the fact that young people aren't as enthusiastic towards Obama this time, Hispanics weren't as motivated, all these things, were all of those things being put into the poll? And then, of course, when Romney started doing really well in the polls, Democrats started saying, well, Nate, now you must have the wrong. So that's always going to be the problem. If you're losing, you're upset with the pollster. But the trend here was very disconcerting. So 9 of 13 had him cracking 50%. And even Gallup's daily tracking poll, which is now the poll of a lot of intrigue because it has Romney up by 7, at that point, Obama was at a 51% approval. If a sitting president's at 51% approval, it's pretty much game over. It's very tough to take points off of the president because you know who he is. It had been a long time since Obama had earned an approval of half the Americans. In the five-month period, April 1st to August 31st, only 6 out of 48 polls showed Obama cracking 50%, and all 6 of those were widely seen as more Democratic-leaning polls. So in essence, in really nonpartisan, so-called objective polls, he just had never cracked it. Now he was cracking it in any poll, Republican-leaning, objective, whatever, Obama was there. 50%, I can't emphasize enough, is absolutely huge. Since World War II, no president with 50% approval has lost re-election. And George W. Bush and Harry Truman won, even though they were slightly below. So that's horrible news for Romney. And even worse, the one thing that Romney always had going for him was jobs. He was the guy who would bring back jobs. Even in 2007, 2008, when people were asked who they trusted most, they always trusted Romney more to handle the economy and jobs than Clinton, than McCain, than Giuliani, than Obama. Foreign policy, not so much. He would usually finish last among those five. What started to happen there was Romney started to lose his edge with jobs. If Romney lost his edge with the economy and jobs, then it was over. It was going to be a blowout for Obama. So that's what was happening when we were leading up to this first debate. He was in deep trouble, and if he didn't flip it on that first debate, it could be over for him. So what did I tell him? I told him he was in deep trouble, and I said Mitt needed to hit a home run or it could be over. The amazing thing was he did. A lot of people have asked me, was I surprised at how well Romney did? Most people give him a 9 to 10 out of 10 on that first debate. I wasn't surprised at all. He's been great on a number of occasions. He was great in all of the debates against these Republicans. He won more consecutive debates than anyone in history, according to the New York Times. And he also had all that practice, 21 debates, whereas Obama hadn't had a debate since McCain in 2008. The thing that was shocking to me, though, was Obama. Obama was horrible, as he himself has admitted. He was probably a 3 to a 4. You never get that in debates. What you usually get is what happened in the second debate, that both of them were pretty good, both of them had their moments where they weren't great, and it's essentially seen as a draw. And so, in short, a CNN survey found Romney getting 67% of the viewers saying that he won. No presidential candidate had ever topped 60% in a debate. He had 67%. It was the biggest blowout in the history of presidential debates by public opinion. The interesting thing, though, do you know who was number 2, 3, and 4 on winning debates? So Obama against McCain, he had the three biggest blowouts on debate performance in the history of presidential. So that's one reason why it was so shocking that Romney had so clearly won the first debate, but it also gave us all pause of what would happen in debates two and three. We couldn't expect Obama to have another no-show. And, of course, he didn't. This most recent debate, viewers give Obama the overall edge, as I said, 46-39%. Wolf Blitzer reported the debate was basically a draw. 73% said Obama did much better than expected. Governor Romney, only 37% said that he did better than expected. But if you look at issue by issue, it was a good thing, a very good day for Romney, and that's why we continue to see Gallup and some of these other polls trending still for Romney in spite of the draw. When asked, who did the debate make you more likely to vote for? It was 25-25. 48% said neither. That's the draw part of it. Who would be a stronger leader? Romney edged the president by 3 points. Who would better handle the economy? This is the one Romney watchers look at the most. 58-40 said Romney would do better for the economy, even though more people said by a small margin that Obama had won the debate. 18% said that they thought Romney was better for the economy, the number one issue in the country. 49-46% said Romney would do better on health care. On taxes, 51-44 for Romney. And on the deficit, the one place where Romney never lost his edge, even in the dark days of pre-first debate, Romney was up 59-36%, a huge margin. So unlikely to change the dynamics, especially with this third debate coming up so quickly. Both candidates got what they wanted out of it, and the game is on. So where are we now? National polls range from Obama plus 3 to Romney plus 7. The poll getting all the attention right now is Gallup, plus 7 there. And it continues to trend. It was 4, then it was 5, it was 6 yesterday, now we're at 7. That has the Obama people very nervous, and it has them really working. The media trying to get that explained, and they're trying to say that Gallup, they were heralding Gallup when Obama finally hit 50%, and now they're trashing Gallup. That's what they should be doing. I don't think there's any way Romney's up by 7 points nationally. The Real Clear Politics compilation of all the polls has Romney up exactly 1 point, 47.7 to 46.7. And if you look at the states, because that's where it all comes down to, and that'll be the final thing we talk about until we get to Q&A, it now has the Romney-Ryan ticket up 206 to 201 with 131 too close to call. Contrast that to immediately before the first debate. There were they at one point had Obama winning 295. So you can see he's lost in this 94 electoral votes that have been granted to him. Let's see. The big poll after the first one that is probably the most trusted is the Pew poll. So pre-debate, Romney was down by 4 points. Romney was down by 8 points. So pre-first debate, Romney was down by 8 points. After that debate, he was up by 4 points. That's a 12-point swing. Obviously, a historic swing for any type of poll. That's a 12-point swing in just a couple of days. Where did Romney improve the most? And this is what gave me pause as whether it would actually be as positive for Romney as it was with women. Romney was down 18 points, according to Pew, leading up to the first debate. I didn't believe that one either, but now they had Romney even with Obama. I don't believe that one. I think it's probably a 5 or 6 point edge for Obama with women. Romney's lead among men, 51-43%, slight increase of 2%. That seems more in the realm of possibility. And a 3-point lead among 18 to 49-year-olds, and and 3-point margin among those 50 and older. So Romney led among both demographics for the first time ever. What about the age of our students here? We did a straw poll here at the Hinckley Institute, had about 1,600. Kendall ran that for us along with our staff, and Obama won the poll here at the University of Utah. Herbert won the poll, so it shows that the students are pretty independent looking at both. Nationwide, Harvard did a poll. This was a scientific poll. Ours was just a straw poll. And Obama leads Romney by 19 points among the group, 18 to 29. But the glimmer of hope out of those numbers for Romney is 48% said they will definitely vote. That's the problem. If you see Obama, he's really good right now, and he was just in Ohio, of course, with Springsteen and Bill Clinton, and he'd say something negative about Romney, and they'd boo, and he'd just keep saying, "Don't boo, vote." And finally, they started chanting, "Vote, vote, vote," and he said, "Now you're getting the hang of it." His biggest problem is voter turnout, and this poll kind of brings that out. 48% of these young people who are leading for Obama, 19 points, said they will definitely vote, less than half. That's very bad news for him because he won in 2008 largely because of this surge of youth voters. The poll also found that enthusiasm for Mr. Obama is also lower than for Romney among this group of 18 to 29. 65% of Romney voters said they would definitely vote, only 55% of Obama. So this is something we see everywhere, is this enthusiasm gap that Romney has versus Obama. Of course, Obama had it in spades in 2008. So enough of the theory and trends. What finally needs to happen? Romney must win the 22 states that McCain won. That looks done. It's always looked easy. 2008 was a horrible year for Republicans. I was grateful Romney wasn't the nominee. I didn't feel like there was any Republican who could beat any Democrat in 2008. The country was tired of the George W. Bush years. They were ready for a change, and then Obama turned out to be a phenomenal candidate, one of the best candidates, one of the best campaigns I've ever seen or even studied. He was great. He didn't miss a beat the entire time. He took down an incredible candidate in Hillary Clinton. So winning McCain's 22 states should be and will be a piece of cake. So then what needs to happen? And it's the 3-2-1 theory that you may have read about. This is Romney's really only clear path to victory. You can go play on the map and figure out different scenarios for him to win. The fact is, and this is why, in spite of all this great news for Romney, it's not a done deal. So he needs to win 3-2-1. What does that mean? Three states. He has to win the three states that are traditionally Republican, but that went to Obama in 2008. That's North Carolina, Indiana, and Virginia. We'll look at a couple of these numbers, but the real problem right there is Virginia. So right now, if you're watching who's going to win, you're looking at Virginia first, and then you get to the two states, Florida and Ohio. Romney should win Florida. That should be in the bank. It's not quite as in the bank as he would like, but it looks pretty good. If he loses Florida, he's going to get blown out. So that leaves us with Ohio. Ohio is tough, and we'll talk about those numbers. And then one should be not that difficult. He has to win one of the five other kind of smaller swing states. That's Nevada, New Mexico, Colorado, New Hampshire, Ohio. If Romney wins one of those, that's the 3-2-1, and Romney is our next president. So Ohio, no Republican has ever won the White House without winning Ohio. So if you wonder why Bruce Springsteen, Bill Clinton are in Ohio, you wonder why Romney and Ann Romney are always in Ohio, that is what it all comes down to. The last Democrat, by the way, to win the presidency without Ohio was John F. Kennedy. So it's a tough road for Obama if he loses that as well. These things can always change. There was a big talk in 2008 about how no Democrat had ever won the presidency without winning Missouri. And, of course, Obama changed that first time ever. So it could happen. But it's tough. If Obama loses Ohio, he would need to win Virginia, Wisconsin, Florida, Iowa, New Hampshire, and Colorado. that's a really tough path. It doesn't seem overly possible. So quickly, the state numbers, then I'm looking forward to your questions, comments. The three, Romney's up by 6 in North Carolina. The trends are good. He's up by 12.5 in Indiana. That race is done. Obama is up by 0.8 in Virginia. So margin of error, trends are good for Romney. There's a chance, but it's still Obama slightly up in Virginia. The two, Romney's up by 2.5 in Florida. Again, it'd be nice to have that 3.5. Trends are good, though. Demographics are good. He should be fine there. But Obama's up by 2.4 in Ohio. That's tough. The one, Romney's only up in one of those states, and that's only 0.2 in Colorado. So nothing to take for granted there. Obama's barely up in New Hampshire, 3.3 in Iowa, 3 in Nevada, and 10.5 in New Mexico. So that's off the board. So it looks like Colorado, New Hampshire are the two where Romney's going to have to play very hard to get one of those two. The game changers, looking ahead, the final debate, we've seen what can happen after the first debate for Romney. No president has ever been reelected with unemployment over 7.4%. It's 7.8%, breaking 43 straight weeks of plus 8%. The next unemployment report comes out on November 2nd, just 4 days before Election Day. It's unlikely to impact, but if there's some kind of crazy movement there, it could help or hurt the president. And then there's all sorts of other topics. You can talk about the money in politics, the super PACs, the campaign finance that each candidate has, the voter ID battles that are churning in key states, the voter mobilization efforts in the key states. And then finally, early voting. We have well over 30 states now already voting. 500,000 votes and counting have already been cast in Florida. So things are locking in much earlier than they'd ever locked in before. When the election day dawns, we estimate somewhere north of 45 million voters will have already voted. That's 35% to 40% will have already cast their ballot before election day. That obviously makes it tough for the last 48-hour surprise. With that, thank you very much, and I wanted to make sure I left enough time for the discussion, which I always enjoy with you. So Rebecca will grab you with your hand up.
And if you could just speak directly into the microphone and state your name if you have a question, that would be great.
My name is Paul Brenner. Going back to the Love and Matheson campaign, a couple weeks ago, Mia Love started backtracking on her original belief of social issues such as same-sex marriage. Do you think she's running back to the base because she's afraid of losing to Matheson?
So the question is Love, your interpretation is Love was being a little more centrist and now she's running back to the base? I'm trying to think if I agree with that. I'm not sure, but I'll answer your question first. Would she be doing that to go back to the base? I think what Mayor Love is mostly doing, if you watch the debates, is she's taking a page out of LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson's campaign, when he first won for Congress. And he just wrapped himself around FDR and tries not to get overly specific on too many issues. And she just simply says, I'm with Mitt Romney. Matheson's against Mitt Romney. Matheson should have won his race in 2010 by a huge margin against a not very good candidate. But he only won by 5 points because of these signs that were put up everywhere, Matheson equals Pelosi. And that killed him. It made what should have been a blowout a very close race. Mia Love now is going against the negative and trying to be so-called positive is essentially Love equals Romney. So I think she'd probably be nervous to hear that analysis, because I think she's trying not to get overly specific on issues so that you can't vote against her, that you can just say, I'm going to vote for the one that's with Romney. And so, you know, there's a real push to make make Matheson say who he's going to vote for. We had him here. in the caucus room with Doug Fabrizio, and he was asked for whom he's going to vote, and he'll never say Obama's name, but he will always say, I'm going to vote for my party's nominee. So that's what I think Love is trying to do. But it's an interesting observation if you've seen a little bit of that. I think the base she's not worried about in talking to her. She thinks it's going to get there and it's going to be fine. She just wants to make sure she's not objectionable to people who might still be undecided in that race. Two here.
My name is Corey Walsh. You might have mentioned it, but what are your thoughts on the Hatch Howell race?
Yeah, I glossed over that. I said Hatch would win by a pretty big margin. Right now, he's the closest of the blowouts. He's at about 67%, and the rest are north of 70, if you believe the polls on these. You know, Hatch is an amazing political story this year. He was left for dead last year because of what happened to Senator Bennett, this feeling that the convention system would spew out anyone who came out that was a little more moderate, who had a record of working on both sides, and the fact that he had been there so long. That was used against Bennett, who'd only been there 18 years. Hatch is at 36. And Hatch essentially just... Well, a lot of things happened, but one of them was that Hatch decided we're just going to get rid of all of the old convention voters and bring in new ones. And he was helped by a lot of discussion about whether the convention system is good for Utah or whether it unnecessarily radicalizes both parties. He was helped by the LDS Church announcing, you know, for 3 weeks, as were the Democrats. Both parties had huge surges saying everyone needs to show up. And, of course, he won that going away, and now it should be fine. Howell has only been able to get press, really, because he said kind of controversial things about Hatch probably won't be alive to finish this one off, which people have criticized him for. But the fact is, and Ted could discuss it, as could almost every other candidate in Utah, it's been really tough to get any oxygen because there's been so much discussion about Romney and so much discussion about Love Matheson that it's really hard for these other candidates even to break through on a page B6 Salt Lake Tribune. And if you don't ever talk about the underdog, it's really tough to get traction. So I think Howell has just found any way he could to get his name in the paper, and at least people know he's running, which can't be said with some of the other candidates. Yep.
Hi, my name is James Gabor. During the first presidential debate, it seemed like the moderator kept interrupting Romney more than Obama, even though Obama got six more minutes of speaking time. So I was wondering how much you think that moderators affect the outcome of voters.
The second debate with Candy Crowley?
First debate.
Oh, Jim Lehrer. I thought Jim was mostly passive in the first debate. I didn't notice anything that Jim Lehrer did that necessarily disadvantaged Romney. If anything, Romney did a pretty nice job of going through Lehrer when he felt he needed to, and then just letting Obama kind of stutter through a lot. The amazing stat out of the first debate on that one was, even though Obama did have, I think it wasn't quite 6 minutes, it was about 4.5 minutes more time than Romney, was that Obama used fewer words. So he said a lot less, even though he had a lot more time. And that was because Obama, by his own admission, just wasn't very focused. He had like 21 ands and uhs in a 1 minute period at one point. So he just couldn't get anything out. It was just the second debate is where the controversy has been on the debate, on the moderator. Candy Crowley, I think, overcompensated a little bit because Jim Lehrer got beat up by, you know, so much for really not taking control of the two candidates. And I think certainly the questions favored Obama. The George W. Bush question was just a perfect Axelrod question. Not sure how that one broke through. The one she's been criticized the most for was her handling of the Libya question, where she kind of interjected and picked winners and losers on that issue, and she's backtracked since then. Typically, that's an absolute no-no for moderators. You don't do your own fact-checking as a moderator. You allow each candidate to have their chance to reply or respond if you think one of the candidates is maybe a little inaccurate or lying or whatever it is. So I think she deserves some of that criticism. But otherwise, she did a decent job of at least trying to keep the candidates on point and move them along. But, yeah, the moderator can have a big impact.
So my name is Annie Weixler, and in the second presidential debate, Obama brought up Romney Care in Massachusetts, and I was just wondering what the biggest difference was and why, like, Romney Care is better than Obamacare, that kind of thing.
Right. Well, the two things they have in common is the individual mandate. And so that is, there's no question, that's a big similarity. The biggest difference probably is Romney Care is 69 pages, Obamacare is 300 and something pages. So Romney Care is much more straightforward, much easier to kind of work with. The other big difference is not a single Republican voted for Obamacare in Massachusetts. It was a bipartisan bill, nearly unanimous. In fact, it was only a Republican who didn't vote for it. And so Romney Care is a bipartisan bill. Obamacare is a Democrat-only bill. And finally, I think the big point that Romney has made about the difference between the two is really a states' rights issue, that Utah has one system that we're using for health care. Massachusetts has another. I think Romney has said Romney Care wasn't exactly what he wanted. He had to compromise because he was a Republican in supermajority state of Democrats. But it was a good bill for Massachusetts. Massachusetts has very different issues than, say, Utah. So his opinion is let each state create their own system instead of having the federal do a complete top-down approach on it. So I think those are the main differences. Romney Care actually came initially out of the Heritage Foundation, and Obama has pointed that out a lot. Obama's been very kind at giving, especially during the primaries, of giving Romney a lot of credit for passing a Romney Care. But it, you know, it's different times. So.
Hi,
yes.
I'm Jim Fowler. I have a question about early voting. What percentage did you say would early vote this year?
They're expecting 35% to 40% will be early vote.
And some of those are already counted?
Yeah, like in Florida, we're well past 500,000 people have already voted.
Right. Is that supposed to be made public or not?
Of who they voted, for whom they voted? Of course, we don't know for sure. And when you look at it, both parties are really taking credit that they are mastering the early vote. And they pull those numbers out of things like, who are the registered Democrats and Republicans who have voted, which is a pretty good sign because both are well over 90% of collecting their own base. So we don't know for sure, but they're starting to try to figure that out.
And that's okay to report?
Sure. Again, you can't know for sure, you know, whether that Republican actually voted for Romney. But there's an intense interest in Ohio and Florida and a few of those swing states of which registered voters are getting out more.
And this is going to go ahead and be our last question.
My name is Preston Bronson, and I was just wondering if Romney said if he was to be elected, he would repeal Obamacare. What are the chances of him repealing it?
Pretty small of getting it like completely wiped off the map like it never happened. There are a lot of strands in it which have already started to take place. And now you've also heard Romney say there are some parts of it which he likes. So, and then of course the final thing is ultimately what replaces it. What do the states do? Some states have started acting on it already after the Supreme Court decision. So I think you will find a real effort for him to carve it In his mind, hopefully, it would be carve out the bad and keep the good. But there will be some remnants, I think, of Obamacare no matter what happens. The other part of that question, of course, on what's next is the Senate. In August, this 538 forecast model on August 19th put the odds at 62% that Republicans would take control of the Senate. They now put it at 16%. There's a lot of reasons for that, but the fact is Republicans are not looking like they're going to take control of the Senate. Probably best case scenario for Republicans now to win what everyone assumed, even every Democrat said this is the Republicans have it, is that Republicans tie, and if Romney wins, then they get the tiebreaker with Ryan. I think that's the best case scenario for Republicans getting the Senate. If Obama wins, it probably is a 51-50 with Biden winning it, and that will impact your answer a lot. Thanks so much. I'm sorry for my voice being so gravelly, but I appreciate you coming. Great to have the Capital Club from the Chamber here with us. Thanks so much for providing breakfast for us, and we'll see what happens a couple of weeks away. Thanks.